You are listening to WSCA 106.1 FM. This is Black Knight Meditations, 4 hours of Black Death, speed thrash, gothic doom, shred power, prog folk, and traditional heavy metal music every Friday night, 9 p.m. until 1 a.m. Eastern. Go to blackknightmeditations.com for broadcast and interviews. Speaking of interviews, it is once again time to endure another B&M discussion with someone you guys are all well aware of. I've been listening since the 80s. One of our most requested artists over the years. It's been over 8 years since Black Knight Meditations has spoken with the Axe Master himself, Lizzie Borden, and now he joins us on the phone from Las Vegas. Lizzie, are you out in Vegas right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, you are? All right. Well,
yeah.
You're currently playing the slots and winning big, so stop hogging them. Let those Vegas grannies drop some nickels to lose big, man. So what's life in Vegas like for you, Lizzie? How's it going out there for you?
I love it, man. I mean, I live pretty much in Hollywood most of my life, but I came out here about a year ago, and it's really, it's kind of the mecca of entertainment. I mean, instead of me waiting for bands to come to L.A. to see or any kind of anything, and a lot of people bypass L.A., but Vegas, everyone, you know, a lot of people are coming. It's turning into a major market, so it's a... You know, like Aerosmith just announced they're doing a thing here, and on and on and on. I mean, every band kind of comes through here. So if you're not out seeing a band and you're seeing a show, and there's plenty of watering holes all around here that are pretty amazing. So I've been having a blast.
So have you found your retirement mecca? I mean, you're gonna grow old and play shuffleboard out there, you think? You think Vegas is that much of a town for you?
Yeah, it's not like it. I mean, it's gone through so many changes over the years. And at one point, it was a family thing, and then it was like a hip hop thing. But now it's kind of all things to all people. It's kind of turned into this big giant city, and there's so many different things going on, and you kind of mix and match and do whatever. So, I can't see myself leaving anytime soon, just because there's always something happening. It's never boring. You know, I mean, I could literally go out every night of the week for the next year and not do the same thing twice. It's there's that much stuff going on out here. So it's pretty amazing.
And the $3 steak buffet. So, I mean, you're pretty much set, right?
All right. A lot of the tourists, once you live here, you don't really do any of the tourist stuff. I mean, I don't gamble. You know, I every once in a while we'll play craps or something for fun, but really most of the time you're not gambling and you're not falling into any of the touristy type things.
Yeah, I think
all the rest of it is at your beck and call. It's pretty amazing.
And I guess if you were a gambler, you probably wouldn't be out there for very long. I'm sure that's slots will suck you in for sure. So the new Lizzie Borden album is My Midnight Things, out now on Metal Blade Records. Let's get into the new record. I want to reference a discussion that I had with you back in 2010. I spoke with you in Providence, Rhode Island. You were doing a show there, still supporting Appointment with Death, and we were grilling you on the next album even way back then. And back in 2010, you said, you know, I feel like we're going to have this next record out probably in the summer of 2011. Of course, 7 years later, here we have it. And you've said recently that the record business is what kept you from going through another album cycle. And but I'm wondering, before we talk about the music, let's get into My Midnight Things, getting to the point of actually having a record for us to listen to, for us fans to enjoy. You know, streaming and downloading and file sharing, that was all around back then. And back then, you seemed to be set on a 2011 release. So I'm wondering what happened in 2010, 2012, around there, that delayed the album? Because you seemed pretty set back then. And then you said, you know what, the record industry wasn't right for a record for you. So what happened? Did anything happen back then that set you on a path of, you know what, I'm not going to do it anymore?
Yeah, I mean, it was the collapse of the industry. It wasn't. When I say collapse, it seems like it just fell apart in one second. It didn't. It slowly crumbled. And as it was crumbling, it was getting worse and worse and worse. We didn't know when it was going to stop. And, you know, it was pretty well vanishing when we put out Appointment with Death. And I didn't know the repercussions of how bad it was until after that album was released and went through its cycle. It's short, very short cycle. And And it, in the end, it was as if I'd never released an album, because it never really there was no way to promote it in any reasonable way. The album itself cost, we did it for relatively cheap, but really to be able to make money off of making an album was, you know, almost impossible to do it the regular way. So in every way, every time, you know, An Appointment with Death was one of those albums that just suffered so badly with the old system, because we were still doing things with the old system, and it's impossible, you know, it's impossible. Even if you're at the top of the game and you're still selling a lot of records, it's still pretty difficult to sell a record in any meaningful way, just because it would cost more to promote it than you're going to make on the album. So it just became worthless to make an album with the old system. So, and then we were touring all over the world, playing lots of places we've never played before. You know, we didn't play a lot of U.S. dates, but we did a lot of stuff all over the world. You know, played South America and Russia and South Korea and all these really, really cool places. And it just seemed that was just going to keep continuing on. Because every season we were end up playing these amazing places. So I said, you know what? What's the point in putting out a new record? So resigned myself to not doing it. And then Brian Slagle kind of got a hold of me and started talking to me and say they have a new system in place, and it's much more it's reasonable to make a record now, and there are ways to make money on the record, and the promotion is not going to be massive, but with the internet, it can slowly go. So instead of this big, you know, promotion to promote an album, it really, you can promote an album for, you know, 2 years. So it's just a slow process of making videos and doing dates and whatever else, you know. So it's not this, it's not, the old system is completely gone. And now the new system is a long kind of, it's the long game. So once he talked me into that, and we figured out how to make the record in a reasonable way, that's when I started really thinking about, okay, maybe I can do this. And, you know, I also missed being a recording artist. You know, that was I wanted to do that more than play live. So, you know, putting out records was a big part of it. So not doing that for so long was, even though we were touring and playing all over the world, it was still, I missed, you know, writing these songs that actually can, people all over the world hear these songs and love them. So it's just that's how it all kind of happened. And that's why there's such a huge gap there. It just became, became no way to work, and then into something that's actually kind of working, and you're playing the long game with these albums now.
So have you been sitting on My Midnight Things for years? Oh, wow, that sounds weird. No, I mean, have you I just heard that. So, so back in 2010 when I spoke with you, you basically told me that this, at the time, would be your Queen album, lots of layered vocals, and actually, to quote you, you said Queen meets Judas Priest. So, over the 6 or 7 years, I'm guessing that goal stayed with you, because we've got My Midnight Things, and sure enough, the Queen influence definitely jumps out, no doubt about that. So because there was so much time in between when you were thinking about it back then and you said Queen meets Judas Priest, and then fast forward 7 years and we've got Queen meets Judas Priest, over that time span, did you find that it changed and you just decided, I don't want to do that anymore, and then you went back to it? Or were you laser focused and all those 7 years it never wavered? Because that's a long time to stick with one, you know, to stick with one vibe.
Because but I had different lineups in the band, and I didn't know if I was going to use those lineups in the studio or not. So I would talk about the kind of record I wanted to make with whatever lineup I had at the time between that period. And you know, everyone, it was very hard to explain what I wanted to do. And so I got to the point where I realized, maybe I can't bring a band in the studio and record it and make the album I want to make. So that was the kind of struggle. You know, we had one good lineup that I really loved, Dario at Loreno and AC Alexander, and I was really hoping I could bring that band, that lineup in the studio. And but it just didn't, you know, no one really understood what kind of record I wanted to make. So we had a couple failed attempts where we did some live jams, but it just sounded like so many other bands, and I was like, I don't want to sound like anybody else, or I do want to sound like somebody who's going to be someone I really admire, like Queen or somebody else. I want to take those flavors. So I abandoned that thought of bringing that any lineup in there, but I always wanted to do a record like this. I mean, I'm always trying to grow and trying to create something different. I don't think any of my records sound like each other, but I think that I'm, you know, keep constantly trying new things, and I do that on purpose. If I find myself sounding like I've already written that song, then I will completely change the music, or take out the guitars, or change the pattern of the guitars, or whatever I have to do so it doesn't sound like I've already written that song. So, it was always in my mind to make a record like this. I just didn't know exactly if I was going to use my touring band or not. And it turned out I ended up not using any lineup that I had.
So let's talk the production of My Midnight Things, because any effort to put forth a vocal record where there is any bit of Queen influence, I mean, it can't mean it's an easy endeavor. And of course, you know your way around a studio, naturally. But how difficult was the actual recording, knowing that the mixing process for this album was going to be so crucial? So even before you get to the mixing, I mean, how difficult was it recording this record?
It was difficult because I really kind of put myself through a lot. I mean, almost like what Robert De Niro would do to make a movie, you know. I isolated myself, and I wrote and recorded in my studio in North Hollywood at like, you know, all night long. And sometimes I'd be in there for a week. I'd get a whole bunch of groceries, and I would just stand there. I wouldn't even leave. I wouldn't even see daylight, because I really wanted that to come out in my voice. And I didn't think that I could fake it. I had to kind of be, that isolation had to be kind of real. So that's kind of, and my studio was in like a industrial area. So at night it's dead silence because there's no people. So it was like I was on an island by myself. So I mean, I kind of forced myself into that so that you could hear it in my voice. And musically the same way. I mean, with the guitars especially, I had to try to figure out how to make the song the star without having the guitars steal the thunder. So that was very difficult, trying to find rhythm patterns, because I didn't want, you know, the song to be so guitar driven that you take the guitar out and there's no song left. So I had to kind of find out those rhythm patterns and figure out how I can do this where I can make the song the star rather than any one instrument. And I wrote a lot of stuff on keyboards, on bass, and sometimes there was a couple, Long May They Haunt Us, I wrote that song without any music at all, just walking down the street. So I experimented in so many different ways to be able to try to make a record like this.
Any thought at any time since you were pushing yourself that you wanted to abandon the project? Or were you so like into it that nothing was going to stop you no matter how long it took?
Well, once I signed the record deal, I knew there was no way out.
Right, of course.
I knew I wasn't going to get halfway through and go, oh, I give up, you know. But I did struggle. I did struggle because I didn't want, like I said, I didn't want to repeat myself. And I didn't want to, I really wanted this song, this album to go, I wanted to try and do stuff that, you know, almost everything I did on this record, I wasn't used to doing. So if I was to record that album again, I could do it pretty quickly because now I know how to make a record like that. But while I was making that record, I didn't know how. I didn't fall back on my, you know, 35 years of recording heavy metal or whatever, and I didn't use any of my old tricks. I didn't use any of my old ways of doing things. Even the songwriting process, I changed around. And so I made it really hard on myself because I didn't just do what I've done before, you know. So it was a struggle to try to make a record like this. I had to keep fighting for it, but you know, and I wouldn't let anyone hear it too, so I didn't have any feedback. So you know, there was like, you know, I would slowly bring people in, but and then finally when I brought Brian Slagle in, he heard three or four songs and just loved it. So I knew I was like, okay, then at least they are on board with the kind of record that I want to make. And Brian loved the whole record. In fact, he gushes over this record more than any record I've ever made, which is amazing.
Because yeah, that's impressive.
It's not a traditional heavy metal record. It's very different.
You're listening to WSEA 106.1 FM. This is Black Knight Meditations, and I'm talking with Lizzie Borden. So, Lizzie, I sometimes ask artists this, not everybody, but I think it's appropriate here, given the fact of what you're talking about with this record. And when we spoke 8 years ago, before you even recorded it, you were saying about how this record was going to play out. Was any thought given to how these songs would come across live when you were recording them, and even when you were mixing them? Or was that not, it's just, you know, figured out when you get to that point? Any thought given?
No, it was actually, I mean, I really had it in my mind, because when I did Master of Disguise, which is my most successful record, it was one of my most adventurous records, because I had a 40-piece orchestra and I had all these things going on. I didn't give any thought to playing live. So some of the songs, unless you really have all lights and everything, you can't push that drama. You know, if I did some of those songs off that album during the day, it's, you know, 4 PM in a festival in Germany, it might not come across as well as it does on the album. So with this album, you know, we tour all over the world. With the exception of the U.S., we're playing to a very young audience, you know, kids in their 20s with that same enthusiasm as the fans we had in the early 80s and mid 80s. So I'm still getting that same response outside of the U.S. That I got when I was a kid, you know, playing. So I really, and the songs that they were responding to were songs off Master of Disguise and Visual Eyes. Those are the ones that they were mostly responding to and going crazy over. So I knew the sort of drum beats that I needed to put on this album. And I knew what I was going to be able to do live, and make sure that each one of these songs could be played, you know, at 4 or 5 in the afternoon with no lights and no nothing, you know, and can these songs deliver and be able to connect without all the lights and without all the effects. So I really had that in my mind when I was thinking about this album and how it would go over under the worst circumstances, and definitely, you know, under the best circumstances with all the lights and the effects and all that other stuff, they should just really go crazy. But yeah, I'm excited to play this album live.
Would you say, well, how about this? What songs off of the new record, My Midnight Things, out now on Metal Blade Records, is songs you're like, nope, this isn't going to work live, whether, you know, we're in a darkened club at midnight or, you know, at a festival at 4 PM? What songs you're like, nope, just not going to do it?
Well, I don't know. I think I could probably, under the right atmosphere, can pull off a lot of different things. But we've done so many different things. I mean, we've played classic metal festivals. We've played pop festivals. We've played death metal festivals, which we didn't belong on, but we're in Holland, of all places. But so you have to adjust, and you have to change the atmosphere for that hour that you're on stage in order to make it work for whatever, you know. A lot of the festivals in Europe, there's so many different genres. Like you take Sweden Rock, there's multiple genres of music playing on that. But if you go to a specific, like what we did, you know, in Holland playing a death metal festival, it's all death metal, and there was just us and maybe one other band that was not death metal. So you have to change the atmosphere. You have to figure out a way to make it work. And then the same thing if we play a pop festival, we have to make that work too, because if you come off a certain way, it's just not, you're not going to have the right atmosphere. But if there was one song that would be kind of hard, you know, obviously the slower songs are the ones that are difficult. So the reprise of My Midnight Things might not have the impact at 4 PM in broad daylight, you know, as it would on a stage with all the lights and everything. But out of all the whole album, I think that would be the only one, because I think I could we're going to do quite a lot of the new album and the new show. So I have all the faith that all these songs are really going to work. You know, we played for every album that I do, when I start the tour, I do at least 7 or 8 songs off the new album. I'm not like a lot of bands only do 1 or 2 songs. I mean, I have to take out some of the old songs to put in the new songs, but that's the way it is, unless I'm doing a best of tour or something like that. But for this, I do at least 7 or 8 songs, and for A Point with Death, we put a lot of those songs in there, and they didn't get the response that I wanted. And there was only 2 songs that really had a great response from the last record, and that was Tomorrow Never Comes and Under Your Skin. Both those songs got an amazing response every night in every country, but some of the other songs didn't. And I was just going, oh, man, this has a lot of energy. I wonder why this isn't working the way I want it to. And it just, you know, it either clicks or it doesn't, you know, and that's kind of the way it is. And that, even the songs that I play from the older catalog are the songs who continually get a response. And the ones that don't, I don't even bother with, because I'm only playing to a small minority of the crowd, and the rest of them are not going to respond. So I just pick the songs to get the best response.
So I'm going to ask you about a few tunes on My Midnight Things, and you tell me whatever comes to your mind, whether a memory of writing it or feedback you've gotten from fans, what the song means to you, whatever. Just whatever comes to your mind right now when I ask you about these songs. The song that I hear a bit of a symphonic power metal vibe on, A Stranger to Love.
That was the first song that I completed on the album where I was doing on the demo. And that was actually the first song I showed Brian Slagle, and he loved it right away. I was changing a lot of the patterns guitar-wise when I used to write a song. I kind of was falling into some of the same pitfalls that, you know, quite a lot of metal songs are guitar-wise, they put those same patterns in. And I just said, no, I can't do that. So I just kept changing things out until I had something that worked. But I don't even listen to a lot of power metal, so I don't even know what that is, to tell you the truth.
It kind of caught me by surprise.
A little bit of here and there.
Yeah, when I first heard it, the song kicks in.
It was a conscious effort to try and work with the guitar patterns on that song to try and do something interesting that would really accentuate the vocals. So, yeah, that was the first song that I completed and gave me the confidence to get on the next song.
Yeah, I was actually listening to it on my headphones walking through a store shopping, and right when the record came out, I'm listening to it, and it comes on, and I'm thinking, it feels like a symphonic power metal vibe on this one, which is cool because it's not something I've ever heard on a Lizzie record before. I want to ask you about my two favorite cuts on the album. The first one is The Perfect Poison.
Yeah, that song, that was probably the one I tweaked the most, because I couldn't figure out where I wanted to go with it. I had the vocal line, and I had a lot of the lyrics, but the music was eluding me. It wasn't, you know, I wanted it to. So I ended up kind of switching around the arrangement in a way that it feels like I'm coming in the middle of the song. You know, we start out with the beginning, and the beginning is the verse, but it almost acts like an intro. And so when it comes in, it comes right into the bridge part. And so, I thought, oh, that was cool, because I never really, you know, any time that I'd done anything like that, it's usually been an intro, you know. But this, there is no intro. It's the verse, you know, it's kind of starting with the verse, but it sounds like an intro. And then it comes right into the song. So it was a weird arrangement that I started to fight against myself, saying maybe I shouldn't do it this way. But then I realized, you know what? I want to do something different. So I stuck with that arrangement, even though it wasn't as normal as most arrangements are. But I liked the way it worked out.
Well, my other favorite cut on the record is already one of my top Lizzie cuts ever, Obsessed With You.
Yeah, that's where we're about to film that video. And the videos, so far, the ideas on this video are over the top. And we're filming in a couple of weeks. And but yeah, I thought that was going to be the first single, actually. But then everyone loved Long May They Haunt Us, and that seemed to be the one to go out. Plus, you know, however it worked out. But yeah, I mean, Obsessed With You was one of those things that lyrically I didn't want it to be as obvious as the title. So you don't really know if it's coming from, you know, even though I'm singing, you don't know if it's coming from a male point of view or a female point of view. And the reality is I know more women who are obsessed with men than men are obsessed with women. So it's one of those, you know, and I didn't want to tie it in. I didn't want it to make it this stalking type of thing and try and make it obvious. I wanted it to be like, you don't even know the person that, you know, you're obsessed with, even though you're alive. And, or maybe you were in a relationship and the other person was falling out and, you know, falling away. So I left all those doors open because I didn't want it to be one dimensional or, you know, once you it's obsessed with you. Okay. I know what that is. You know, I really wanted those doors to be open. So it could go so many different ways. And that's the stuff we're looking at in the video too. We want to leave all those doors open. So it's not as obvious as the title.
Well, speaking of the title, My Midnight Things, I just have to throw this out there. I keep wanting to call this album My Midnight Thongs, and I think I might be projecting there a little bit. And see, maybe, but hey, seeing you in concert, I mean, it kind of fits when you think about it with your scantily clad female victims up on stage. So, yeah, I need to get away from My Midnight Thongs. Wow. Speaking of your concerts, one thing I've noticed about you at your concerts is how approachable you are with the fans. And you know, we can go right up to you and talk. We've seen you at the merch table at shows. But okay, how about that aside? What about if a fan sees you on the streets of Vegas, or you know, you're shopping at a Costco, picking out a box of fish sticks or something? I mean, do you want to be Lizzie Borden when you're in your sweatpants and old T-shirt and trying to live your life? Do you only want to be that at the venue, or are you willing and ready and able 24/7?
You know, I mean, without the fans, I can't continue to do what I do. You know, if you don't show up at the shows and you don't buy the records, then I can't exist. So I would be a fool to walk around like some big rock star and ignore the people who are actually supporting me. So it wouldn't make any sense for me to do that. I don't see it from that point of view. And I came from Hollywood where that was like a standard issue thing to do, you know, ignore your fans. But I never got that. I never understood that. So yeah, I'm approachable because I want to hear what they have to say. You know, when someone tells me they love a certain song or they don't like a certain song, I want to hear that. I want to know what's working and what's not working. And the only way you get to hear, you got to hear it from the horse's mouth, you know. And if they say, man, I really love that song, it makes me think, okay, I did it right. Why don't you play this song or whatever, you know. Hearing from people is the only way to do it. So, yeah, I mean, especially in Vegas, you know, I'm seeing more and more Lizzie Borden shirts all over the place. So it's pretty cool. I love it.
Okay, so let's go a little further there. So outside of music, you know, when you're away from Lizzie Borden, what do you do in your daily life? You know, do you go to a certain grocery store weekly? You know, what's in your Netflix queue? And, you know, when you want to be alone and just not be the musician guy, you're just you on a daily basis, you know, who are you?
Well, so far for the last 2 years, it's been Lizzie Borden 24/7. But yeah, I mean, I'm normal. Do a lot of normal things, and my Netflix is mostly me adding to my list of, you know, mostly sci-fi and horror and thrillers and stuff like that. I just love, especially great filmmaking. I love editing. I've been into editing for quite a while now, and so you know, I kind of do a lot of different types of things. You know, my day is broken up into so many different things, and you know, I'll probably play an hour, maybe an hour and a half of guitar. I will pluck on the bass for, you know, 30 minutes. I will play some piano. I will come up with vocal ideas for the next record and kind of analyze that. I love the UFC. Watch a lot of the UFC and a lot of MMA. And yeah, and again, we go out, you know, on the strip all the time out here. So it's pretty fun. You know, it's a full on, it's the same thing I did in Hollywood, but now we're doing it in Vegas. And in Vegas, it's so much more fun than it had been in the last few years in Hollywood. And of course, in the mid '80s, it was insane in Hollywood. So it's hard to even fathom those kinds of nights that we had there. But I'm having an amazing time out here. But it is really during the day, I'm in the house doing all those things I just mentioned. And at night, you know, I'm on the strip and we're doing all sorts of crazy things out there. So, but I'm already kind of mapping out the next album. So I'm hard at work doing that because I really want to do what I told you I was going to do in 2010 and then, you know, keep making records. So, now that I've signed a new deal and like I said, things are in a better place. I hope to have an album out at least every year and a half, something like that.
That's what we want to hear.
I have to start mapping out the next one. So I'm well into mapping out. I've probably got maybe 8 or 10 songs, skeleton ideas, and I've got my concept and I'm just starting to piece it all, a lot of it together. So, yeah, my days are filled.
All right, so let's go along with that theme. I was going to touch on that anyway, but since you brought it up, let's go there. You know, you've said yourself to other people and to me, you don't like to repeat yourself. You basically mentioned it tonight. You don't want to copy your last record. So you've done that Queen album that you've wanted to do for years. You've done the more heavier, riff-oriented metal record with Appointment with Death, and you've done the more hard rock style. I mean, you've covered a lot of bases, yet while still being Lizzie Borden. So where do you go from here? I mean, you've had your rock bands outside of Lizzie Borden. You've done it all pretty much. So where do you go from here? And if you want to get back into the vibe of let's put out a record every couple of years, where do you go from here? What have you not done that as an artist you need to do?
Oh, there's so many things, but mainly the production side of things. You know, I've been getting into that side for quite a while now. You know, from Visualize on, I was like, I have to make these records better. You know, the first couple of records we just kind of went and did because we didn't know what we were doing, and we did it in the first couple of years of the band's existence, so we didn't know anything. But once I started learning, then you kind of keep wanting to get better and do new things and interesting things and. You know, and all the tools that we have available to us right now is amazing. You can do so many different cool things. So I try to use the new tools and try to break through a barrier and not say, okay, I want to make a old classic record. You know, I don't think that way. I want to keep breaking new ground and try and do something that I haven't heard before. And so that's the things I'm working on. And I'm also working on my voice. You know, I really want this next album that I'm working on to be, I'm approaching it in a different angle vocally because I've already done what I wanted to do, what I set out to do vocally with My Midnight Thing. So now I have a different approach that I want to try. And I don't want to give it away, but it's some interesting things that I'm slowly working on to try and implement into the new songs.
Now we know what it is.
Very different than Midnight Things.
Yeah,
it's interesting for me.
Of course, because it's being at these Dutch death metal festivals. That's where you're going. Some more brutal vocals from Lizzie Borden. Yeah, okay. We're gonna get the Lizzie death metal album because hey, you haven't done it yet, right? So there you go. it's rubbed.
I wouldn't be opposed to it. We actually talked about doing that. Me and a couple of friends of mine would say, let's just do one of those records and see what it's like. No one has time. So
speaking of doing something different, you mentioned, and maybe I should know this, maybe I shouldn't, but you mentioned to me that you had either had done or were planning on doing, I guess as a one-off, covering a song by an 80s entertainer. And I remember joking, oh, it's going to be the Eddie Murphy Party All the Time song. Did that ever happen?
No.
Okay. Well, because you wouldn't back then. You said you can't tell me what it was. So since it didn't happen, what was it going to be? I want to know what this was.
Oh, you know what? I don't remember that.
No.
There was, you know, when we're brainstorming, I mean, there are so many ideas. and some of those ideas float back, or you have to remind what I said before, you know, and then I go, oh yeah. And then, you know, so it's really a zillion ideas. And then the ones that actually make the most sense in this moment are the ones that we actually do. But yeah, maybe that was just an idea that I had that I never ended up doing, but there's a lot of those.
Yeah, and I kind of got the idea that it was going to be something like a B-side maybe, or like a Japan-only kind of thing for your next record. But I found it interesting that you said it was an 80s entertainer, so you're basically saying it wasn't necessarily an 80s singer or a band, and like that's fascinating. I definitely want to hear that. Okay, so it never happened. All right.
Well, we did we actually, maybe this is what it was, we did a demo of, oddly enough, it's such a weird thing. This was the end of, I don't forget when it was, but we did Delilah by Tom Jones. And then I think a while later, Bruce Dickinson ended up doing a Tom Jones song. I don't remember which one it was. Maybe it was the same one. I'm not sure. But I have a demo laying around of us doing Delilah from Tom Jones. And it was actually really, it was pretty cool. I mean, it'll maybe get in a box set at some point, but that's the only thing I can think of right now. There's probably a zillion other ones,
right.
But you know, we've done cover songs before, and
yep, you're kind of known for a couple
like
right?
that. Yeah, like I said, we did the one Tom Jones song, but you'll maybe hear it one day.
And well, when you put out your Lizzie Borden covers album, just saying, that would be awesome.
You know, that's another one of those things that's been on the horizon. You know, let's do a covers album. I would love to do all my favorite songs. But, you know, right now, because I've had such a lapse in releasing albums that I need to catch up. So
right.
These next two albums after Midnight Things will definitely be all original material. And maybe I'll do something like that.
Awesome.
We'll see. I mean, who knows? You never know.
Right. And I love how you're already talking about two albums. And Midnight Things has only been on a couple of months. I love hearing this.
Well, I signed a three-album deal, so I know that they'll
thank
be a
you.
Total of three albums for sure.
I was definitely going to ask that. So three albums. Okay.
Yeah, if things keep going the way they're going, and this album has been the best reviewed album I've ever had in my career.
Really?
I've never had such a positive reviewed album where actually people who actually listen to the record got it. You know, there's about 10% of the world who don't understand it at all. They probably only have the first couple of albums and they just don't understand it at all. But if you've seen the trajectory of my career and my songwriting and what I've done over the years, you know, My Midnight Things makes perfect sense.
It does. And
so, but it's been the best reviewed album I've ever had. All my albums have been mixed reviews, every one of them. So this one has been about 90% positive. I mean, you know, we're actually, I'm reading the reviews going, wow, they actually nailed this. They understood it. And I almost never get those, almost never. Well, I read a review and the guy who wrote it understood what I was doing.
That's interesting to hear. I remember you saying that Appointment with Death was your, at the time, was your best reviewed record of your career. So it's good to hear that this one, which sounds like a Lizzie record, it's not like it's a different kind of thing. But yeah, granted, I've been calling it your Queen album for obvious reasons. So it's good to hear the reviews are good there. And I think that when you listen to it, to me as a Lizzie fan, it sounds obvious what you're going for. But I will say this, because it's your vocal record, that because we had this discussion in advance, I was expecting it. And I've heard from some listeners here at the station who most like it and a few don't. And I don't think they were really prepared for that kind of vocal approach. Maybe that's what the 10%ers are. But I don't think you wouldn't know this, but I think I told Vince over Metal Blade, right now it's our most played album at the station. And
that's so cool, man.
But Lizzie's always been one of the most requested artists here at WSCA, well, along with like the Dark Throne and Manowar, but we've always get requests for Lizzie Borden, which is awesome. And even with this record, and I'm so glad that we're all big fans here too of this record. But since I've asked you about tracks from My Midnight Things, I want to ask you about some other tunes from your career. And the first two songs I'm going to ask you are my two favorite Lizzie songs. And again, you tell me whatever comes to mind, although I will say I demand you to explain why you don't play these live every single night, because I want to hear them, damn it. First one is, it's a Lizzie anthem in my mind, Be One of Us. I love it. what comes to mind when I say Be One of Us?
That was one of those songs when I was writing the demo. I wanted, you know, I was writing the bass lines, I was writing the guitar, and I wanted to go back from heavy to clean guitars. I was doing a lot of kind of cool things for me at the time with that, and I did want it to be an anthem. And we played it for years, but you know, when you keep going, you have to kind of replace some songs and put the other songs in. So, but yeah, we from Master Disguise tour on, I think it was in the set for I don't know years. But yeah, it was one of those songs that even when we were recording it, it had so many cool elements to it. Even the rhythm pattern during the lead break, you know, I wanted those harmonies to bounce off of the rhythm guitar pattern that was happening there. So, you know, I kind of worked on all those elements when I was writing the demo. So, yeah, that song actually came together really well. And it does break my heart that I can't play it in every, you know, that it does not make every show. But, you know, like I said before, whatever songs get the best reaction, those are the ones that stay. And because we play sometimes our last tour, every night we played a different country. So, you know, and we were getting the same response on certain songs, and other songs were not getting that same response. And, you know, one country would love it and the other country wouldn't, you know, or they wouldn't respond in the way that I want them to respond. So, you know, those are the songs that I toss out, you know, and every day, you know, every decade is a little different, and people respond to certain songs, you know, in this day and age that they may not have. Like on the Visualize album, we played all 8 songs, and we'd never played Voyeur way back in the 80s. And then I put it back in the set in the 2010 or something like that, and it ended up getting one of the biggest responses every night.
Fantastic.
So it's one of those
song things
where it's like, okay, well, I don't know if it was just the decade or I didn't want to play it for whatever reason, but now it's getting a great response. So it's you know, you never know. But when you're around for this long, you know, things change. But yeah, Be One of Us is one of my favorite early songs that I wrote.
Cool. Now, my other co-favorite song of all time for Lizzie Borden is the best song Iron Maiden never wrote, Counsel for the Cauldron. Counsel for the Cauldron. God, I love that song. What comes to mind?
Well, those first two albums came, we wrote them, like, both of them inside of maybe a year and a half, because we had Love You to Pieces and Ready to Go, but Brian Slagle didn't have any money to record the album. So that album should have come out a year before. So while we were trying to write that, I mean, waiting to record that album, we wrote the Menace album. So all those songs were written in a flow. You know, they're two completely different records with two completely different productions and different players on them, actually, too. But they were written at the same time. But yeah, Counsel of the Cauldron was one of those weird songs when we were recording. It was a kind of a crazy time because right when we went into the studio, our guitar player had to go to jail. So we had the rhythm guitar player in there, and I wanted to build up the intro because we didn't have a big intro for it. So we kept putting all these harmonies on. I go more, 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 and then we just kept putting more and more on it. So yeah, I mean, those were the songs. We didn't have any tempo control. We didn't understand anything about anything. We just were doing it, and how we sounded in our rehearsal studio, we were trying to capture in the studio, but we didn't have the skill to be able to do that. So during our rehearsal, we sounded so much better than we did on the album. And we couldn't figure out how to do that. It wasn't until Visualize where we realized we had to get a good producer to make us sound as good as we sounded at rehearsal. You know, so that's what I think about when I think about both those first two records.
Well, you mentioned Menace, and it seems to me that the Menace of all your records, well, especially the early records, it seems like Menace is the most or least, how do I put it? I don't want to say it's your forgotten record, but I think it's the one that seems to be mentioned least when people are talking about your discography, which I think is a fantastic record. I mean, Notorious, come on, that's one of your top tunes. But I do want to ask you about a couple of songs off that record, Brass Tactics.
Yeah, that was a riff that was Alex Nelson wrote, and it came off so weird. I loved it right away because, you know, at that time I was writing the skeleton of every song. And then I would bring in one of the guitar players and show them what I had. And then we would go right into the rehearsal, and then we would piece it all together. And that's how all those songs came together. But I wanted everyone else to do that. And we didn't get a lot of that. Here and there, someone would write something that we used, a riff or whatever. But Alex wrote that riff, and it was so weird, and the vocals just came to me, and you know, I had the character in my head that I was gonna play on that album, so I knew what he needed to say, and so yeah, that song was created pretty quickly based on an Alex Nelson riff.
All right, one more tune I'll ask you about, Ursa Minor.
Yeah, that was. There's a convoluted story behind that song.
Uh-oh.
Basically, in the early, early days, we were playing anywhere and everywhere, and we ended up going up to San Francisco quite a lot. And so the first time we went up there, our guitar player, he actually almost put his eye out with an X-Acto knife. That's why he wears a patch on that album. And wow. But he couldn't come to the show, so we had just a rhythm guitar. So and we ended up playing a place called Ruthie's Inn, which is a punk place,
right,
where Metallica started and a whole bunch of other bands.
Yep.
And but the audience was all punks, and they just wanted to hear punk music. So and we only had one guitarist, so it wasn't even and he was our rhythm guitarist at the time. So it was like, okay, we just play these. You know, we were playing pretty fast. But anyway. I'm on stage, and these punks were trying to torment me until I brought out my axe, and then they they ran for the hills. But they were trying to torment me at the beginning, you know, at the front, and there was this one girl, and she had a teddy bear on a leash. And I grabbed it from her and ripped it apart, and she was horrified and freaked out by it. But they were trying to, you know, screw up our show. So I decided to turn the tables on them, and they were, and in the end, they probably, I forget what was going on, but they ended up loving us. But during the whole thing, they were trying to create chaos. So I just turned the tables and created my own chaos. So anyway, when I got that bear and ripped it apart, and then it got in my head, we actually ended up putting teddy bears in the show, and I did it every night. Because it got such a great reaction. And but anyway, I just thought when I was writing that song, Alex was involved in that song as well. And, you know, I just thought about the star constellation that was out there. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where I wanted to tie that in somehow. But, you know, it's too hard to write about a teddy bear. So I decided to connect it in that way. And that's how I came up with that.
There are not enough teddy bears in metal. I like how you admit you put teddy bears in metal. I mean, come on, not many people could pull that off. I don't think anybody can, but apparently you did. I never knew that story. I never knew that. Certainly, I don't think anybody would have guessed
that. We ordered a ton of teddy bears, and we brought them on the tours. And every night I would do this. And every night, people would have just this horrific reaction to their little teddy bear being ripped to shreds. And, you know, almost all the girls in the audience had teddy bears on their bed, you know. So it was one of those things like, why is he doing this?
Yeah, it was interesting.
It was a great reaction to get. And those were the kinds of reactions during that time that I wanted, because this is before, you know, everything became obvious to everybody else. I mean, we were being raided by the vice squad in certain places all over the country because they thought we were corrupting their children. So that stuff doesn't really happen anymore.
Yeah, all the old days.
That kind of reaction anymore, and I don't even seek that reaction anymore because there's no point, you know. But back then, you could get it, and you know, I constantly searching for those ways to get that reaction. So it was really fun to do. But you couldn't do it now, really.
So My Midnight Things is the new album. It's out now on Metal Blade Records. You've gone on record as saying it's not going to be another 7 years between records. You've got two more due with Metal Blade, and you're aiming for about a year and a half to 2 years at most between records, right? 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 Yeah? Yeah?
That is, you can take it to the bank on that one, because we have a new thing in place. And when I said that during the appointment with Death, I didn't know what the future was going to hold. I didn't really know until I realized that album wasn't even coming close to reaching the audience, and it wasn't going to. And it wasn't going to make me any money. It wasn't going to be fruitful in any way. So once I realized that, I was like, okay. But now this is a whole different way of doing business. So I can guarantee that there will be the next record. And unless I am going on tour for 2 years straight without a break, that would be the only exception. But like I said, I'm already starting to work on the next one, and I have a lot of the skeleton of all angles of the record and the ideas behind it that I've just started to work on.
Well, before I let you go, you know, the fans would kill me if I don't ask about Lizzie Live. Do you have band members either in place or people in mind that you want to reach out to for your live shows?
No.
Okay.
We haven't got to that point yet.
Well, I think you have a drummer, but yeah.
Yeah,
maybe some guitar players will help.
We're looking for guitar players and bass player, and try to find the people that would fit, you know, because I'm playing songs from at least one song from every record, and we're playing
awesome.
Quite a lot of songs off of Midnight Things. So
awesome.
I'm working on the show aspect of it already. I've got a lot of the show worked out, and you know, we're working on all the elements of the show right now. But I've got my eye out looking for the right players. But so far I've been getting like all these shredders and all this stuff, and I've never been interested in that kind of guitar player. Mm. You know, I've had people like Dario Lorena and Alex Nelson and these fluent, flowing guitar players rather than sounding like they're doing scales, you know, really fast, you know? So, I get a lot of those guitar players that do, I can play these scales really fast. You know, I'm like, you know what? It sounds like a guitar lesson to me. You know, I want a flowing guitar player. So, you know, it's harder for me to find the right guitar player, but I do have that in my mind. I won't accept anything less. I don't want guys playing scales really fast. You know, that doesn't help me in any way.
And I think it's easy enough to get a Lizzie Borden tour booked in Europe, South America, and plenty of places all over the world. But the United States is, you know, your homeland is the toughest place. It's a big country, and the venues are not necessarily going to be the same size. So is the United States at least is there a target on the United States as far as let's see if we can make this work?
Well, right now, I think they're going to start booking the festivals for next summer in Europe and maybe some of the festivals here in America. They're going to start booking next week. And as far as we were talking about doing a couple of shows in the West Coast, we were actually going to try and do it this year, but it seems more and more unlikely. But it'll be like maybe one show in Vegas, one show in LA. I don't know. And then we were, you know, going to start out really slow. But it's the U.S. market is very difficult to play because it's so wide open. Most people don't know how expensive it is to tour, and you have to, you know, it has to be worthwhile. You have to pull the numbers every night too. So it's very difficult to tour here. I can tour Europe all over the place and draw really well.
Right.
But here, it's a crapshoot. You just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, you got to find the right promoters.
So the show that I'm working on is going to be a great show. I already know that. But you know, it costs a lot of money to be able to put on a show, and you got to employ a lot of different people to do this. So, but I'm trying my hardest. I really want to play and do a really legitimate tour in the U.S. since we haven't done one in so long. You know, we did a bunch of fly-in shows way back when, And I don't like those. I want to do a legitimate tour. So I'm hoping that it's going to happen.
Okay.
It just has to have all those stars have to align.
Of
be
course.
Able to do the right kind of tour and get the right kind of excitement out there so people actually come. Because, you know, in Europe, we're playing to a younger audience. So if we go on at 11 o'clock at night on a Monday or Tuesday, they're there. The audience is there, and they're ready to go, and they're excited. If I try that here, it's very difficult because the audience is a little older here. So Monday and Tuesdays, they're not going to come out, especially and not wait and see you at 11 o'clock at night. So it's very difficult to be able to – you can't do a tour and not play Mondays and Tuesdays and Wednesdays and all that. So can't just be Saturday nights. So that's where the problem lies, and that's the reason why we haven't toured the hell out of the U.S. in the last few years. But I'm trying to overcome that and fix that. And I'm getting a lot of response from venues all over the country who really want the Midnight Things show. And if I can connect all those dots and do a legitimate tour, then that's my plan. So I really want to do that. We'll see. We'll see how it works out.
Bring back more teddy bears, dude. That'll get the kids out. So what's the best?
I have a whole new show, and it's really going to be a great show. I mean, there's a lot of cool things are going to go on during this new show. So I'm excited about it. Just in the designing of it and how we're working it out and what our plans are. We talk about it every day. So, getting to that process.
Well, I've seen you at one of your own shows, and I've seen you at a fest where you were totally out of place and totally won the crowd over, even though they had no idea who you were. But by the halfway through the show, they were totally on your side. So I have no doubt your show would win over some people. What's the best way for fans to reach you directly?
We have the website lizzieborden.com, and then Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram is Real Lizzie Borden. So those are all the places.
And they can get to you directly as opposed to somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of other people on those sites as well, but I'm on there too.
Okay. So they can reach you directly. Awesome. All right, so again, My Midnight Things out now on Metal Blade Records. Lizzie, thanks a lot for your time. Really, really appreciate it. I want to implore the fans, if you don't have the back catalog, you have to have it. I mean, Love You to Pieces and Appointment with Death are my personal favorites. But get the new record. You definitely delivered. I was wondering if that Queen record, how that was going to turn out. And it sounds like a Lizzie Borden album to me. So I love it, and hope to see you live in the United States. I know you're going to definitely do some shows overseas for sure. And take care, Lizzie. We'll talk to you again in 2020 when the album gets released, the follow-up, because I know it's going to happen. You said it will. We're going to hold you to it. Thanks a lot, Lizzie, and take care. Horns up, brother.
Okay, man. I'll see everybody out there when we get out there.